Till our living altars claim one holy light, one heavenly flame.
The song which we are about to sing begins, "The God of Abraham, praise, who reigns enthroned above, ancient of everlasting days, and God of love." We've been singing songs about our Father and our Creator, who is near to every loving heart. Isaiah expresses thoughts like this in his book, chapter 40, verses 21 through 31. He extols the majesty of God and his power and his greatness as the Creator. He explains that no earthly person can stand against God. But he also goes on to say that those who wait upon the Lord and who look to him for their aid shall not be found wanting, because he shall lift them up. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Hath it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in, that bringeth the princes to nothing. He maketh the judges of earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted, yea, they shall not be sown, yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth. And he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. To whom then shall ye liken me, or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high, and behold who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, not one faileth. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from God? Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not be faint.
At the early service, Brother and Sister Prouvette took a row of people home with them after the early service. Jack McKinney and his wife want us to announce that all former Zurich, Switzerland campaigners are to be at their house tonight as guests at 71 Mohawk after the second service. And if you don't have a way and want to go, meet Linda McKinney out in front of the ad building, this building, after the second service. Also, all pre-engineering and pre-physical therapy students are invited to the home of the Maurice Lawsons after this second service. The Lawsons live on Market. I don't know what the address on Market is. 1509, that's right, 1509 East Market. That's all pre-physical therapy and pre-engineering. I can't figure out what the connection, except we're trying to get people together who never would get together otherwise. But they want you to come to their house tonight for our get-together. Bill and Billy Dykes, Dials, are inviting everyone who is on row 7. That's the near-empty row back here. There are plenty more seats down front here on row 7. And that's all the way across, though, I think, isn't it? Yeah, that's all the way across, row 7. If you need a ride, they will provide it. Bill, stand up, you and Billy. Stand up where we can tell who you are. All right, that row right there, all the way across, is the guest of Bill and Billy Dials tonight. Reba Berryhill at number 5 Harding Place. Reba, where are you? Stand up, dear, so they can see you. What row do you want? All that whole row. Row 13. All right. To go to Reba Berry Hills tonight. All right. Anybody else want to take home a row of people with you? All right. Anybody else? Ken's going to take row number one. All right, Ken. It'll serve him right if we'll all just move up one row. All right, that's good. We want to get to be with you. And our time is so short, we want to get to know you before the year goes on any further. May God bless us as we worship together and as we love one another as we gather together on these beautiful occasions. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. That's stated in Psalms, the 14th chapter and verse 1. It's restated in chapter 53 of Psalms, verse 1. And then there's a statement in Proverbs 1 and verse 7 that says that the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. And in Ecclesiastes 14:13, it simply says that this is the whole of man, to fear God and keep his commandments. That's 13 and 14, I think, of, no, 12 and 13, chapter 12 and verse 13. That the whole duty and the whole essence of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. Tonight, I'm going to study with you for a few moments on another evidence for the existence of God. It's an evidence that I've thought about for some years. It's one that has to be reckoned with. And that evidence that I'm going to present to you as exhibit number B is that of the Jewish people themselves. What I've read just now or quoted was quoted out of the Hebrew Scriptures. And I want you to note something tonight, that these writings came from a vast and enormous accumulation or collection of writings of a people that are quite different from you and me in their ethnical origin and background. They are not us. They are not from the same source as far as ethnics are concerned. They had a different origin, not in the sense that they didn't all come from Adam with us, but there was a separation way down through the years to where we are not really kin to them in the sense that we are of the same stock. And I'll clarify that in a few moments. I think you know what I'm talking about. They're quite separate from you and me ethnically. And strictly speaking, the writings that I've just read do not belong to us. We had nothing to do with bringing them about, and frankly, we've had nothing to do really with preserving them. We cannot claim any credit for their vision. We cannot claim any credit for their contribution to the elevation of humanity. These things came from Jewish people. We are Gentiles. We are what the Jews would call the ethnoi, the nations. We use the word world, we Christians do, when we talk about a person being a member of the world. Oh, is he a Christian? No, he's a part of the world. The Jewish people, in the same context, would talk about you and me as Gentiles. They would talk about us as being ethnoi, the nations. Anyone who wasn't a Jew to a Jew was a Gentile or a nation, a person of the nations. And you see, we don't really own these scriptures. We don't possess them. We descended from such people as Attila the Hun, who, if you've never seen a picture of him, you have a shock in store. The Huns came from up in northern Mongolia. They were barbarians in every sense of the word. Before Attila the Hun came down into the Roman provinces, he had never tasted cooked meat. They ate it raw. He had never tasted bread baked in an oven. Can you imagine it? That's the kind of people that were our ancestors. They strapped their heads to boards with thongs of leather to where their skulls would be scrunched up into a point. And they looked like someone with a dunce cap on, except they didn't have the cap. That was the way they went around. They were heathen. They were absolutely barbarians. We were descended from such people. The Hungarians came from them. They settled in Hungary. We're descended from such people as that, from the Germans, from the Ostrogoths, the Visigoths, the Gauls, the Vikings, the Vandals. All of these people, the Germanic tribes in the Black Forests of Germany, all of our ancestors came from one of these or some other Gentile tribe or nation of people. And quite frankly, at the time of the coming of this era in which we're living, the Christian era, some 1,000 years after these writings were that I've just read to you, 1,000 years after they were written by the Jews, our ancestors were still being described as separate from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. We were still described as being blackened or darkened in our understanding. And we have no body of writings. The Gentile nations have no body of writings that can compare with the body of writings that the Jewish people can boast of as they are contained in the 39 books of the Hebrew Old Testament scriptures as they relate to God. Oh, we've got a lot of books on philosophy, Plato and Aristotle. The nearest thing that we have that would come to paralleling the Hebrew writings concerning God and an awareness of God would be from Socrates. But we still, even when you compare the highest that we can produce as Gentiles with what the Israelite nation produced just as a matter of course, we're not even in the show. We can't hold a candle to them. The writings that I've just quoted are from Hebrew writings. And the subject matter that I've just referred to, how they extolled God and how they looked upon Jehovah as being one of the basic understandings of life, the whole subject matter indicates that while the Hebrew people were looking up to the eternal God, our ancestors were bowing down to stumps and were offering animal sacrifice and swine's flesh to rocks and were praying to gods that neither can talk or hear or answer or save. And that's about the distinction between the Hebrew people and we and us who are Gentile in our origin. Now you may wonder, well, why are you making this separation? Well, I'm doing it intentionally. I want you to see a very sharp differentiation between the Jewish people and their ancestors and you and me today in our ancestry. I want you to see a sharp distinction between the literature that our people have produced regarding God and the literature that the Hebrew people produced regarding God. And I do this for this simple reason. The Hebrew people, I believe, are a number one exhibit whenever you come to investigating evidence for the existence of God. I think they have to be reckoned with. And I do not believe that you can reckon with them as they should be reckoned with without viewing them objectively in the sense of looking and seeing the differentiation between them and us. I think you need to recognize that you are of Gentile origin. I think that you and I need to recognize that we have no part nor lot in this matter of the Jewish heritage except by the grace of God. We are a wild olive branch that's been grafted into a holy root. We did not originate it. We were not even a part of the origin, and except it be by the grace of God, you and I would still be bowing down to stumps and stones. We would still be burying our enemies after having killed them and digging them up in 3 days and eating them. We would still either be perpetrating such atrocities as that or something similar to it, except it were for the grace of God, who in his almighty mercy included you and me in this heritage of the Jewish people and allowed us also to be joint heirs with this promise that was made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And we sit here today and worship the God of Abraham, the God of Abraham praise,
But do you realize that that was not your original purpose, or that was not your original place in life? That was a Jewish privilege. It's been given to us by the grace of God. And we need to recognize it. The Jewish nation figures strongly in any attempt to investigate and present evidence regarding the existence of God. This is illustrated in the life of Disraeli, the great prime minister of England during the 19th century, when the king of England asked Disraeli, "Give me in one word sufficient evidence for the existence of God." Disraeli said, "Jew, Jew." And you know he was right. The Jewish nation is of such a stature and occupies such a position in the world that they demand that we reckon with them. And I want us to reckon with them tonight. Who were these Jews and who are they? Well, as far as their origin is concerned, let me state first of all that they were not always called Jews. The word Jew is more or less a nickname given to them. It's a shortening of the word Judah. Probably was not applied to them until after the dividing of the northern and southern kingdoms, at which time the southern kingdom was called the kingdom of Judah, Judah being the principal tribe of the two, Judah and Benjamin. But this tribe of Judah became the overall tribe of the southern kingdom. And as a result, they began to be called Jews, out of respect for this and out of as a nickname for the word Judah. But they originated with this man Abraham, or Abram. Abram, the Bible says, the Hebrew writings call him a Hebrew. The word Hebrew means one who came from the other side of the river. That is the river Euphrates. And it points us to the origin of Abraham and to his background and his ancestors. They came from, and Abraham was a citizen in the kingdom of Mari, which was a very civilized and highly developed civilization about 1900 years prior to the coming of this era in which we're living today. Abraham lived as far on the other side of the cross of Christ as we live on this side of the cross of Christ. That'll give you some indication about how far removed was this origin of the Hebrew people. Abraham eventually migrated north, coming up in following the great Fertile Crescent as it stretched from the Mesopotamian Valley on up into the northern part of Syria and on down into Canaan and into Egypt. This was the ancient Fertile Crescent. Abraham followed that as God called him, according to their records, and finally came into the land of Canaan and became the progenitor of a multitude or of a multiplicity of nations. And these nations are recorded in the Hebrew writings as well as in secular history. They are called the Semitic nations, from Shem, one of the sons of Noah. And Shem was the first of these sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the Shemites, or the Shemitic or Semitic people, were the people from whom Abraham came, and then these other nations followed along. The word Shem or Semite or Semitic means olive or olive-colored skin. And the people were called that. They had this olive-colored skin. You can remember it by the word Gethsemane, which means simply the Garden of Olives, or Gethsemane. And that's exactly what it means. And this is the word that's used here. They were Semite or Semitic people. The Jewish people were only part of that Semitic issue from Abraham. Other people who came from Abraham were the Arab nations. They're over there fighting like cats and dogs now with their brethren, the Jews. But they're all of one origin, Abraham. The Arabs came from Abraham through Keturah, who was his second wife, and through Hagar, who was the handmaid of Sarah. From these ladies came the Arab nations, the majority of them practically. But Abraham begat Isaac, and then Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob had 12 sons. They became the Jewish people, or the sons of Israel. Jacob had these 12 sons, and because of a famine in the land of Canaan in about the 18th century, that in the 17th, because of a famine in Canaan, they were driven and exiled kind of down into Egypt, and they migrated there in about the 17th, 18th century B.C. Joseph went there as a preparer for their coming, and then Jacob and all of his brothers came in, about 70 souls at the beginning of that migration. They were then reduced to slavery in about the 16th century. They remained slaves for about 200 years. And then in about the 15th century, or the 14th, about in there, Moses came as their deliverer, led them out of Egypt into the land of Canaan after a 40-year wandering in the wilderness, then 53 more years under Joshua, the general of the Israeli armies at that time. They settled into the land of Canaan in about the 14th century B.C. and occupied it until A.D. 70 under the rule of most of the major powers of the world at that time, the Greeks and the Romans and the Babylonians and the others who influenced their lives. In A.D. 70, Titus, the Roman general, put an end to a rebellion by the Jewish people by destroying the city of Jerusalem, leveling it as you would wipe off a table, and killed 1 million people in this 3-year siege that was laid against the city, carried away to Rome 200,000 other Jews, put them to work completing the Colosseum that still stands there today. The Jewish people did all of this. In about 125, there was a rebellion again. Though the Jews had been expelled from the land of Canaan in 70 A.D. officially, there was an uprising, the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. There was then an official excluding of the Jews in 125, and the land of Canaan was named in honor of the enemies of the Jewish people, the Philistines. The land of Canaan was changed to the name Palestine, and it was done simply in spite, or to spite the Jewish people. And it has remained remains that really till today. It's called Palestine in many circles. The Jewish people all during this time became exiles all over the world, while mainly the occupants of the land of Canaan or Palestine, the occupants were the Arab people. In the 7th century, the Saracen invasion overran the whole of that part of the country, not just Israel, but went on up into Asia Minor, took all the northern coast of Africa, went on over toward France. Charles Martel stopped them at the Battle of Tours, turned back the Saracen tide, but they settled into all this area, took it over lock, stock, and barrel, and pretty well occupied it until in the last few years after, well, until the last century, the Turks took it over in the last couple of three, I'm not sure when the Turks took it over, but I know when it was taken from the Turks. The Turkish people lost control of it after the Second World War. It was given back in a nominal token sense to the Jewish people as they were given a foothold there in the 1940s. In 1948, there was the Great War between the Jewish people under the British protectorate, supposedly, against the Arab people. They got a larger foothold. And then in 1967, there was the Six-Day War. And in 1973, there was this last war. And there were then numerous other wars and fightings and skirmishes that the Jewish people were a part of in order to gain a position and gain a stronger foothold in what they considered to be their land. And that's the present condition of it at this present hour. It's still unsettled, and they're still fighting. But that gives you some brief, just a very sweeping survey of the Jewish origin and of their history and of their present status in the world. The Jews have, for 2,000 years, been a hiss and a byword. They've been persecuted. There were 6 million of them killed during the great Nazi extermination of the Jewish race. And they've been persecuted and cursed and made light of in every nation where they've ever been. And yet they stand in every nation in a position of excellence. They stand in positions of power. I want to read some names that will be meaningful to you, I think. I've accumulated through the week some listings, or a listing of some prominent Jews. In the area of science, Albert Einstein, of course, is a very prominent figure. In the areas of diplomacy, or the area of diplomacy, David Ben-Gurion, the prime minister of Israel, before he was replaced, before he died. Disraeli, the prime minister of England, for on 4 different occasions, I think, Brother Munsey told me, in the 19th century. Our own Henry Kissinger is a Jew. In the realm of jurisprudence, Arthur Goldberg is now sitting on the U.S. Supreme Court. In the area of finance, it would take us all month talking regularly and full time to tell about how the Jews have gained a foothold in the financial world. But the Rothschild family is one of the most outstanding in the financial world. In the areas of music, Yasha Heifetz, the great violinist, Leonard Bernstein, the great musician, Hammerstein of Rodgers and Hammerstein was a Jew also. In the area of motion pictures, Samuel Goldwyn, who just recently died, of Metro, Goldwyn, and Mayer, and I bet you Mayer was a Jew. Was he? I suspect Mayer was a Jew also. I wouldn't... Does anybody know? I suspect he was. In the area of entertainment, of entertainers, Dinah Shore was a Jew. She was a Populanus. She lived down the street from us in Winchester, Tennessee, but her real name is Populanus, but she's a Jew. Barbara Streisand is a Jew. In television, Barbara Walters is a Jew. In our newspapers, Ann Landers is a Jew. In history, David Cronin. In philosophy, Martin Buber. And you can just go on and on and on, naming Jewish people who stand in positions of importance. Well, what difference does it make? Just simply this. These people have to be reckoned with. I don't mean that you have to exterminate them. I'm simply saying that they stand as exhibits of the evidence of the existence of God. And you can't just ignore them or overlook them and hope that they'll go away. There's too much about them that has to be answered. Their claim is too unique. And the position that they occupy is of such stature that you are going to have to answer about them. And they stand all around you. It's not something that you read about in history. It's not some far-off fantasy that you've heard about. You can go out and this very night lay hands on a Jew. He's here in flesh and bone. The Jews are all over the world. And as such, they stand as an evidence to the witness of God. Why? All right, there are three things that I want to say. Three aspects of the Jewish nation that must be reckoned with. And I'm going to have to hurry. These three aspects of the Jewish nation are these. Number one, the nation itself. The nation itself is peculiar because of the fact that they claim to have had their origin from God. Notice, the nation itself, their whole history is tied up with Jehovah. Jehovah was their origin because he spoke to Abraham and called him out. Jehovah was their deliverer. God brought them up out of Egypt. Jehovah was their legislator. He gave them the law of Moses from Mount Sinai. Jehovah was their provider. He fed them for 40 years in the wilderness. Jehovah was their protector. He did their fighting for them and stood alongside them as they fought their battles in the land of Canaan. Jehovah was their benefactor in the sense that he gave them the land of Canaan. He says, I am giving it to you. I've already given it to you. It's yours and to your posterity. And as long as the Jewish nation has been a nation, they have acknowledged Jehovah as their God. They've not acknowledged Yahweh as this God of theirs. And the word Yahweh means the God who is because he is. I am because I am. That's what the word Yahweh means. And the Jewish people have acknowledged him as long as they've been a nation of people. But here's the peculiar thing about them. Not only is the fact that they claim that this is their origin, they claim that this is the only reason why they have for existing as a nation of people. It's not just a byproduct that this was their origin. The Bible says, their own writings say, that this is the purpose for our existing as a nation of people. In Isaiah, the 43rd chapter, in verse 10, God told them, you are my witnesses. He said, let the other nations bring whom they will as witnesses and let them speak. But you are my witnesses. I have called upon you so that you may know who I am. He said, you are my witnesses. And this to me was very graphically illustrated in a placard carried by a Jewish man I saw in Jerusalem in 1970. This placard had upon it, he was protesting the secularization of the Hebrew nation. And he said, are we to become like other nations, like London and New York and Los Angeles? Are we to become like other nations without the Torah, without the law? In other words, are you going to forsake your moorings? Are you going to forsake your origin? Don't you realize that you have an origin from God? Don't you realize that your identity is closely tied up with the Torah or with the law? Don't you realize that your destiny is inseparably tied up with Yahweh, the God of the universe? I'll tell you what, I'm going to make a statement, and it's not all that profound, but it needs to be made. Never in the history of the world has there ever been another nation, either before the Jews or since, that came into existence solely for the purpose of bearing witness to a God. Never. That's why I think the Jewish nation has to be reckoned with. What are you going to do with them? Just ignore them? Are you going to just hope they'll go away? They're not going to go away. They're here. Well, you say, all right, I know they're here, but so what? This is what? They claim to be from God in their origin. They claim that God called them out and made them a special people. You're going to have to reckon with it. Well, so what? So what? Second, this. not only the nation in itself must be reckoned with, but their writings must be reckoned with. These 39 writings, or these 39 books of the Old Testament of the Jewish people, claim to be from God. All of their writings claim to be from God. 2,600 times in these 39 books, these people's writings say that these things came from God. 2,600 times, thus says Jehovah, or thus says the word of the Lord, or the word of the Lord came to me. 2,600 times it mentions it like this. And why not? You would say, sure. And we have a right as Gentiles. We have a right as a people who have not known this God back when the Jews knew him. We have a right to say, okay, if you're so closely associated with this God, and if you claim as it is, if it is as you claim, that there is a God, like you say, who is intelligent, who made the world, surely it's not asking too much to show us some communication that he's made with you. Come on. And you know what? They say, okay, sit down. Have you got about 10 years? I'll tell you all about it. And sure enough, they began unloading on us Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy and Joshua and Judges and Leviticus and all, Joshua, Judges and Ruth and all these other books. 39 of them. Go talk to Adela the Hun. Adela, you got anything you can show me from this God of the Jews? Or you got anything you can show me from some God? Give me some kind of communication. You know what Adler would say? He'd say, huh? That's right. Never before was there a nation of people who was brought into existence to bear witness to a God and have as supporting evidence 39 books that claim on 2,600 occasions to have come from this very God from whom they claim they originated. All right. But still, that's not all that much, is it? What's the impact? The impact is this. When you look at the nature of these writings, it's absolutely fantastic. The nature of the writings here are these. Their historical part of them records the gruesome sins and failings of the leaders of the people. The very origins of these people, their sins are pointed out. Abraham was a liar. Isaac, I'm sure there was something about him. I can't think about it right now. Jacob was a very deceitful man. David was a murderer and an adulterer. And you just go on down the line, and all of these great men, they just record all their sins right down as though there was no way of hiding it. And why not? But I want to ask you, why preserve such things as that if it's against the people and if it's against their leaders? The editorial part of the writings of the Jewish people speak in a detrimental way, in a disparaging, or what I would like to call in a derogatory manner. Their writings don't talk very highly of the Jewish people. If they were such a nature that they were always blowing the trumpet of the Jewish people, you know, and talking about how wonderful and how fantastic the Jewish people were, I can understand why they want to preserve writings like that. But that's not the nature of these writings as far as the editorial parts are concerned. I mean the non-historical parts. The nature of these is that the Jewish people practically are called whores. They're called unfaithful wives. They're called everything under the sun. That's right. And add to that the fact that the Gentile nations are freely spoken in the Hebrew writings as being a people who were going to come in and enjoy part of this fellowship and enjoy part of the inheritance that belonged to the Jewish people. And it's all through their writings. And yet these people died to preserve these writings. That's right. The Dead Sea Scrolls is witness to it. How they preserve these writings like fanatics. Man, you couldn't get them to get rid of them. They considered these things to be such as they called defiling the hands. They were radioactive. That's about our translation. They were radioactive, and they felt they were that divinely inspired that anybody that handled them, his hands were defiled. And yet it recorded all the hideous sins of their leaders. It recorded all the derogatory marks against the Jewish people. It recorded the Gentile coming in and the inclusion of the Gentiles in the Jewish inheritance. And yet they're going to die to preserve all that and keep it all? That's right. The Jewish writings have to be reckoned with. Not only the nature of them, but the quality of them. These things came from people who had been in a foreign country for 400 years. In the midst of a background of idolatry. They had been Jewish slaves or slaves of Egypt, the Jews had been for 200 years. They had had a slave mentality developed. They had been tromping around in mud pits and in brick vats and brick pits for 200 years. And yet immediately upon deliverance out of the land of Egypt, they went just a bit over the Red Sea, and all of a sudden you hear them saying this: in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Just a few years later, you have them saying, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. When I look at thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon, the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that you care for him? And I could go on and on, but our time is up. You're going to have to reckon with these writings. They claim to be from God. The writings demand an explanation. Finally, in conclusion, not only do the Jewish nation itself, does the Jewish nation demand a reckoning with, because they claim to be in their origin from God having called Abraham for a purpose. Their writings are outstanding. Their law is a prototype of all modern legislation. Their laws of hygiene are not excelled even today. You can go back and pattern your hygienic practices and still do fine today. Their writings have to be reckoned with. Then thirdly and finally, Earth's number one son was a Jew. That's right. This one nation, who was the one witness to the one God, spoke frequently in its writings about the coming of one who would be a representative of that God, who would be so outstanding that even the Gentile nations would seek him. Isaiah talked about him, that out of Jesse's stump, out of the stump of Jesse, there would arise one that would rule the Gentiles and they would seek him. I wonder who that could be talking about that even Gentile people seek after among the Jews. It had been spoken of earlier to Abraham that one of his seed would so bless the earth that all the nations of the earth would be blessed in his coming. I wonder who that could be. From Abraham, well, that would make him a Jew. From Jesse, that would make him of the tribe of Judah. H.G. Wells, and I've told you this before, but H.G. Wells, when he drew up a list of 10 men who had more than any other men, influenced the world for good, you know who he put as the number one? He put Jesus of Nazareth. But H.G. Wells was an infidel. But he recognized greatness when he saw it. And this one whom H.G. Wells identified as being the number one of the sons of all the sons of earth, this man came from the Jewish nation. He came from the stock of Judah. He came from the issue of Jesse. And everything else that's predicted or prophesied about the man, he fulfilled out of the Jewish writings. And you know, he himself claimed to be this one from God. He claimed it. Oh, I tell you what, it begins to close in on me. I can't get loose from it. We're sitting in a position today as Gentiles, being blessed by a Hebrew background. We are wild olives having been grafted into a holy root. But it didn't come from us. And I bow my knees to the Father of heaven and earth because of the fact that I, as a Gentile, as a barbarian in my ancestry, have been given an place equal to that of a Jew. And I've been made one of God's children, and so have you. Have you ever considered what would have been the conclusion had Jesus of Nazareth not been from Nazareth? Had Jesus been from Hong Kong? What had it been if he had been called Jesus of Hong Kong and he'd been a Chinaman? Have you ever wondered what would happen to your faith? If this man who for 2,000 years has been the very number one son of all the earth in his influence for good, had he not been a Jew from Jesse's fruit and David's descendancy, had he been a Japanese or a Chinese or a Hungarian, you ever wonder what would be the obstacle in the way of your believing? Well, it would have blown this thing sky high. when you find out that the one nation that spoke of the one God and has a writing that consists of 39 books, which 2,600 times claims to be communication from the one God, when that book says that there's one coming who will so bless the earth that even Gentiles will look out for him and search for him. And then when you come to the place where you find one man of such outstanding character, and you trace his genealogy back, and you find that he came from the Jews, he came from Jesse, he came from David. What are you going to do with it? Well, I can't do anything but believe. The conclusion is inescapable as far as I'm concerned. I can't do anything with it. And don't think I haven't tried. I've tried to reason it out, but I can't come to any other conclusion but what God is. And the Jewish people are one of the evidences of it. Nature, as we noticed last Sunday night, is the number one Class A exhibit. The Jewish people are number two. They are exhibit number B. And you're going to have to reckon with them. Do you believe in God? Or are you just playing games? We're standing in the presence of the Almighty God. He made the universe and he made you. And he's expecting you to acknowledge him. May God bless us, and may we consider the evidences that surround us about him and bow our knees and loosen our tongues to praise him. And if you need to respond tonight to confess your faith in his Son, do so. Whatever may be your need, submit to God and prepare to meet your God. He's coming one day. You'll have to stand before him in judgment. Will you use this opportunity as an opportunity to respond as we stand and sing?
With sweet accord, join in a song with sweet accord, and thus around the throne, and thus around the throne.